Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
And welcome back to Stomp This Way. Today, we are talking about the Deadly Mantis. Getting back to the fun things we used to do, like reviewing random giant monster movies from the before time. Are you excited?
Oh, yeah, I am.
Yeah, it's getting me nostalgic. But yeah, the Deadly Mantis. A little bit of production trivia?
No, why not?
All right. Well, this film, it's from the 50s, one of those B-movie monsters, you know.
From way back when.
Popular back then. You know, for this film, they did have three papier-mâché models built for the film of the mantis. One was a massive 200 foot long by 40 foot tall hydraulic powered model that also had a wingspan of 150 feet.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of surprising for a movie like this. Somebody put some work into it. They also had two smaller models, one 6 foot long and one foot in length that they used for the scenes where it was walking and flying. But yeah. They also used some shots of a real praying mantis a couple of times in the movie, or at least one time. All the Air Force and military footage is stock footage. Shocker.
Wow.
The footage of the Inuit village is from a 1930s film called SOS Iceberg. This was released as a double bill with a spy film called The Girl in the Kremlin.
Ooh.
And this was featured on an episode of MST3K in 1997. And in fact, our Blu-ray release, our Shout Factory Blu-ray copy, I believe includes that MST3K episode. We did not watch it. We watched the normal version of the film. Probably would have been much improved with MST3K. But that's neither here nor there. We are professionals. Some box office. This was released on May 26th of 1957. It had a budget. These are Wikipedia numbers. I don't know how accurate they are. But it said it had a budget of $350,000 and had box office proceeds of about $1 million. Now, of course, these things are kind of hard to judge because these are the B movies they released on double features, like I said. So, you know, they got to split the proceeds between two movies.
Yeah.
But anyway, I guess it did okay. But what we're going to do right now is we're going to listen to a trailer and we're going to come back and we're going to list off the cast and crew, read a plot summary, and we'll talk about the Deadly Mantis. So we'll see you in a bit.
Where are the bodies?
Easy.
In all the kingdom of the living, there is no more deadly or voracious creature than the praying mantis. You think you'll be able to drive it out to sea?
I hope so.
Every device of military science, every defensive weapon, radar, planes, rockets, marshaled to destroy 1,000 tons of beastly fury. A monster leaving a trail of carnage. Spreading panic across a continent.
Hit the alert button.
Yes, sir.
Oh.
Nothing in its path was safe. Not the planes in the sky. Not the ships at sea.
Mamma mia!
Nor the vehicles on the ground.
You boys might just as well go back. There aren't any bodies.
And then this most dangerous monster that ever lived challenged the security of our cities.
All right, we're back. This film is directed by Nathan H. Juren, written by Martin Berkeley and William Allen. Effects by, these people went uncredited, but Cleo E. Baker, Fred Noth, and Clifford Stein. Music by, also two uncredited people, probably because this music was taken from other movies, Irving Gertz and William Lava. And starring Craig Stevens, Alex Talton, and William Hopper. And the plot summary is as follows. After a volcano eruption releases a giant mantis from its icy imprisonment, the giant insect begins a reign of terror as it heads south towards the tropics. The military calls in paleontologist Dr. Jackson to help with the problem, and Jackson, along with Colonel Parkman and magazine editor Blaine in tow, follow the creature along its path. After being wounded by Joe crashing his plane into it, the mantis takes refuge in the Manhattan Tunnel. Colonel Parkman takes a few men in and kills the creature with chemical bombs. Jackson, Parkman, and Blaine all go in to examine the dead corpse, and Parkman and Blaine get in one last romantic moment as credits roll. More or less.
More or less.
More or less.
You got the gist of it.
I think I did, yeah. I was kind of, my attention was kind of phasing in and out, to be honest. but like I said, this is back to good old days when we would pick a random
cheap
giant monster movie and review it. I love these old, even when they're bad, I love watching these old black and white 50s cheap monster movies.
Hey, can't beat a 50s cheap monster movie sometimes.
You're darn right you can't. But this film, it starts with your kind of your typical setup that these kind of movies have. It's some shots of a volcano and it erupting. And then because that a volcano erupted in the southern hemisphere, then icebergs broke apart in the northern hemisphere or something. And then this mantis gets released and unfreezes, melts. And yeah. And then there's an infomercial about how radar systems work and military movements in northern Canada. And you know, one of their outposts, weather outposts, gets attacked and destroyed. And then an airplane gets downed. And so then they find this broken off piece of one of its legs or whatever. And they call in Dr. Jackson, paleontologist at the National Museum of History or whatever it's called. And he decides it's a giant praying mantis. So he and his reporter, editor of the National Museum magazine or whatever, head up to the Arctic Circle and chill with those guys. There's some scenes that would not play as well in modern movies where all these dogs flock to this woman like dogs in heat. You know.
They don't see many women up there.
We don't see many women around here. I was like, But, you know, they hang around and then the military base gets attacked by the mantis. And so then they figure out the mantis is heading south. And so they head south and, you know.
And, you know, they start shooting everything they have at it.
Once they find it, they start firing anti-aircraft artillery into the air and
machine guns,
whatever they can get, jets, scramble the jets several times. Lots of military stock footage. And, you know, eventually, like I said, I guess Joe crashes his plane.
He ejects and crashes his plane into it, and then it takes refuge in the Manhattan Tunnel.
Yeah.
Where it finally, they were able to kill it.
Yeah, they filled up with smoke, and Colonel Parkman Joe goes in there and with some handheld chemical bombs, and
but they only work in close range, Aaron.
That's right. Only work in close range, so they got to get real nice and close, real close. But anyway, yeah, they kill it. Then the three main characters, if you want to call them that, go in there and you know, have one last scare where it almost grabs Marge, but it was just the nerves moving. And, you know, then hit Marge. So I thought there was going to be a romantic relationship between Marge and
Jackson,
Dr. Jackson. Mm-hmm. But it actually develops between, out of nowhere, kind of, between
Parkman,
Marge and Joe. So, yeah, they kiss and, you know, Jackson takes a picture of them instead of the mantis. And everyone laughs. And then the credits roll.
Yay!
But, you know, yeah, this is your very stereotypical B-movie, monster movie from the 50s. You know, the characters are just here to dump a lot of data and exposition. No real character arcs or themes or plot, other than, oh, there's a woman and she's going to fall in love with one of the two male leads. Which one's it going to be?
And there's a mantis wreaking havoc everywhere.
And then, yeah, there's a mantis wreaking havoc. So, you know, it is what it is.
Basic plot for those days.
These types of movies, you know, I accept the non-monster stuff. It's going to be boring. It's a lot of military boardroom scenes and radio chatter back and forth and stock footage of military aircraft and anti-aircraft guns. And, you know, then when the characters are on screen, it's either they're talking about Mantis is doing this or the Mantis is doing that, or they have some cringy, you know, romantic stuff.
You know, and somehow it's better than the day's human plot in movies.
Yeah, still less painful than a lot of the other stuff we watch. But these kind of movies live and die on the monster scenes. And, you know, of course, we'll talk about more specifics and effects and creature design. But I think that the monster scenes in this are
pretty good.
Pretty effective. You know,
somebody put some work into this movie.
Yeah, the mantis is, I mean, one, it actually, well, we'll talk about it in creature design, but it actually resembles a mantis, and praying mantises are scary anyway. They're terrifying little, I don't like insects. I especially don't like praying mantises. Praying manti? Mantises? Whatever it is. So yeah, a natural built-in fear there that they definitely work on. And you know, I just have a recent newfound appreciation for old black and white movies. And this movie, this transfer that Shout Factory have looks really good. Mm-hmm. So picture is nice and crisp.
Crisp.
And yeah, you know, I would. And it's only, again, the greatest strength of these movies. You know, they kept them short because they were meant to be double features. They were filmed with the intention of being a double feature. So this one's at a nice, crisp 78 minutes. You know, doesn't overstay its welcome.
No.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You ready to go into creature design?
Yep.
Yeah, so creature design, I mean, it's a giant praying mantis. Like I said, they have three separate models. I think I was able to pick out the three different ones. Of course, they have the really big one, which is really impressive. One that they actually took the time to build that thing. And, you know, again, it's not, I mean, you can tell it's not a real praying mantis, obviously, but just the fact that they have that giant to scale, or at least life-size model, physical model there.
That is, moves around by itself and everything.
Yeah, that's hydraulically powered. I mean, so no wires. I mean, obviously they don't show the back of it where they got the hydraulics plugged in. But no, it's pretty impressive for one of these cheap B-movies from the 50s. And, you know, so they actually have, like, actual buildings it's standing next to, actual cars it's standing next to. And that stuff looks really good. Now, the flying model doesn't look quite as good.
But it's dark, usually.
More. Yeah. If they had the legs folded out and maybe a little bit more menacing of a posture instead of folded up under it,
yeah,
I think it would look a little better. And then the other model, when it's like moving and walking, I think I saw it a couple of times. It looks fine.
Looks like a mantis.
And then one time when it's climbing up the Washington Monument, it's a shot of a real praying mantis crawling up a fake monument or whatever. You know, so there's that. But effects overall, again, because they have that life-size model, that stuff looks pretty good. There's some compositing shots that are a bit iffy. But, you know, that just kind of comes with the territory.
It's the 50s.
I say the worst scenes are the flying scenes, especially when the jets are shooting the little animated rockets at it or whatever. That doesn't look great. But, you know, it is what it is.
It's a cheap monster movie from the 50s there, and you can't ask for too much.
Can't ask for everything. And I'm not. I think this movie does pretty good, all things considered. And score, generic 50s monster movie score.
Yeah.
Probably same pieces of music we've heard in a dozen other of these movies, honestly. So, you know, it is what it is.
It fits the movie.
It fits. It adds to the atmosphere, the nostalgia for these kind of things, I guess. That's the positive I'll say. Yeah. So anyway, let's get into some final thoughts. Andrew, what'd you think?
I thought it was a pretty good movie for what it was, you know. Going into it, I thought it was just going to be a very bland and boring and hard to get through movie. And it ended up being halfway decent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not the worst one we've sit through and by far.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The humans actually were somewhat entertaining for what the movie was.
Mm-hmm.
Kept the plot going good enough. And, you know, the mantis looked really good. And I really enjoyed the mantis scenes. They put a lot of work, surprisingly, into those.
Mm-hmm.
And the score fit the movie perfectly. It made it more nostalgic, like you said, to these era movies and effects, you know, good for what the movie was. And I think I'll give this movie a C+.
All right. Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree. I think, you know, it is your pretty standard 50s B monster movie, but I think it's paced pretty well. I mean, the stuff without the monster is boring, but they actually have the praying mantis. You never go too long without seeing the praying mantis, which is a vital part of these kind of movies and their success.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have, you know, like a half hour stretch where we just have to listen to these boring characters talk about boring stuff. You know, most of the topics, when they are talking, they're usually focused on the mantis and where is it going and all this. It gives the movie kind of a kinetic feeling that it's always moving somewhere. And some pretty good scenes. Like, you know, we didn't talk about that scene towards the end where they have the fog roll in and the bus and all that. I mean, that's some pretty good stuff for movies like this. And yeah, I mean, again, I had a fun time getting back to watching these classic old black and white monster movies. I'll give this movie a C. I think it's deserving of a C. Just for them building that giant 200-foot paper mache
hydraulic
model. If for no other reason than that.
Somebody put some law work into that thing.
Yeah, there was somebody had sleepless nights, I'm sure, trying to fit us, get that down for this shooting schedule I'm sure that this thing was on.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, speaking of things in black and white, you know what me and Andrew saw Friday night? Godzilla minus one.
Minus color.
Yeah. You know, I'll say this. This episode is going to come out on Wednesday, so it's running February 1st, so you'll have Wednesday and Thursday to go see it, if you haven't already seen it. But if you like the film, I would definitely recommend going and seeing it in minus color.
Yeah.
Definitely a new perspective, a new
outlook on it.
A new way to view the film. I really enjoyed watching it, you know, kind of really harkens back to the old 1954 mm-hmm. movie more though, so than it did even before. And I think some of the stuff in black and white looks really good. And you can definitely tell that they didn't just go in and desaturate the movie and re-release it. They actually went in scene by scene and color graded the movie. Remastered the image and all that. I think at times it looks like they might have added a little bit of grain to the film, and there were other scenes where you could tell they really put in the work to maximize that black and white effect for that scene. Is it better than the color version? I wouldn't say that. In fact, if you had some crazy scenario where you could ever only watch the movie once, and you asked me should I watch it in color or watch it in black and white, I would probably say that you should watch it in color, because one, I think that the standard version of the film, they did a great job with the color palette and all of that. But also, there's just nothing in cinema quite like Godzilla's dorsal fins glowing electric blue as he powers up his heat ray and then blows stuff away. And just that blue flash always brings a thing of joy to my heart. But the black and white version was cool. So if you haven't seen it and you have a chance to go see it over the next couple nights, definitely go check it out.
Yeah.
Any other additional thoughts?
No, you pretty much covered everything.
That's great. I did love at the beginning. You know, it started with the new Gen Toho logo.
Yeah.
But then it went to the old classic one that the old school text at the bottom, and like the camera wasn't quite steady when they were filming the logo. So yeah, I did appreciate that. But anyway, what else? What else would we have to talk about?
Do you have any other news?
Box office, our weekly box office update at -1. With this new expansion back into more theaters for this black and white release, I think it's going to bring in between $2 and $2.4 million this weekend. It will pass its next milestone, which was Parasites, the Oscar-winning Korean film. It made $53.3 million in the States, and Godzilla Minus One is going to beat that, which will put it at like the, I don't know, highest grossing non-American live-action film, or one out there towards the top. I don't know. I don't know how much Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon made, but yeah.
So that's making history.
It's making history. Doing a great job. And its theatrical run will come to a complete end after the first, February 1st, this Thursday. And did we talk about last week? It got officially nominated for the Visual Effects Academy Award, which makes it the first Godzilla film to be nominated for an Oscar. And looking at the competition, it might have a chance of winning. You know, it's not... I know the other nominees were like Guardians of the Galaxy, and I don't remember what they all were, but you know, it doesn't have like a Cameron Avatar movie to go up against that it's just absolutely going to lose to or anything. I think it's got a shot, so we can root for that. I do think it got a bit gypped in the other categories, but I'm not going to complain. This is a happy moment.
Hey, at least it got nominated for something.
Yeah, it got nominated for something. That's right. So. Happy about that. But other than that, just a quick word on our upcoming schedule. Next week, we're reviewing another American film, Tentacles. Maybe more of a creature feature in the style of Jaws, rip off of Jaws. But it's about a giant squid that kills people. I think it came out in the 70s. So
yeah.
I got it on Blu-ray with a double feature somewhere. I had to dig it out. And we're going to watch it because I've been wanting to. I bought it for this podcast. Before we went on hiatus, and now we're back. So, and then I think after that is Cue the Winged Serpent, which is kind of a satirical film. We're going to watch that. And then, I don't know, a bunch of other random stuff until March 29th. That's not the date the podcast comes out, but that's the date that Godzilla X Kong will come out.
Oh, and boy.
As soon as we can get together with Dylan, record a podcast over it. We'll get that podcast out to you guys after that movie's released. So, I think that's it. Andrew, tell them where they can find our website.
You can find our website at stompthisway stompthisway.wordpress.com.
That's right. You can always contact us at stompthisway1954@gmail.com. I apologize if we sound a little echoey this week. We are breaking in our new podcast studio / extra bedroom in the house. and acoustics are not that great as of yet. I got to work on that. But
we're getting places, you know?
We're getting places. We got a studio.
We've never had one of those before.
A space solely dedicated for this podcasting.
We even got a futon for this.
There's a futon over there. There's a futon. It's a cheap futon. Feels like you're sitting on broken glass. But hey, it's a futon. Anyway, I think that's all we got for you this week. Don't forget to watch Tentacles and join us next week for a podcast over it. And as always, I'm Aaron.
I'm Andrew.
And we'll catch you in the next episode.